Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Greetings. You are listening to Topically Yours on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul. And as always, I'm your host, Deirdre Schuler. And it is a pleasure to invite my cyberspace and world audience to tune in today to our show, because I guess you know by the song I just played, Cloud Nine, who my guest is. And I am honored to have him on the show, Dennis Edwards. And, you
Thank
know,
you
I
so
want to
much.
Tell you. Oh, thank you. You know, it's a pleasure. I know you haven't been well.
Well, I've been well, you know, but you just brought back so many memories every time I hear some of the songs, you know. And, you know, for me, they're great songs, but it's got a different meaning because, you know, four of my guys are gone, you know, Eddie, David, Paul, and Melvin. And, you know, when I hear the voices and sometimes.
And Ollie Woods just passed.
And Ollie Woodson just passed, you know, so. It's just a blessing to be here, you know. And when I hear that record, believe it or not, that particular record, was my very first record with the group, you know, I replaced David Ruffin. And what I didn't know the significant about that record is it won the very first Grammy Award for Motown after all of those huge, huge hits they had. Would you believe that was the first Grammy Award?
Well, I think they were just waiting for you.
I think back when it came out and it won the Grammy, I was too busy trying to learn those steps to even think about, you know, I was just getting in the group, too, you know. I'm the youngster, and I'm like, they say, man, you won a Grammy. I'm like, yeah, but teach me that second step.
Well, that is interesting because I don't know how many groups were actually dancing, but the Temptations were always known for their choreography.
Yeah, you know, like a lot of people, when I first got the call, you know, replace David, evidently is one of my all-time favorites, and then I replaced him. But the first thing I thought about, you know, I said, well, you know, I'm a good singer. I know I can sing, but, man, I can't do all of that stuff. You know, because when you thought about the Temptations, you just thought about the choreography, not only the singing. They had a picture. They painted a picture of a show. And, you know, you got to sing, you got to do the hands, you got to do the feet. And, you know, the hardest job I had when I first got in the group was I had about 2 straight weeks of 8 or 9 hours a day in the basement learning steps in front of
a
mirror.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was, you know, it when I found out, when I got into rehearsal, you know, when they asked me about joining the group, that was the very first thing that I almost said no. I said, no, man, I don't think I could, you know, I could ever be a Temptation, you know, and dance like you guys. But when I found out, it's basically timing, and it takes a lot of hard work and rehearsal. And that's how I started off.
Wow. That's a very interesting story, and I don't know if a lot of people even realize that.
Well, people don't know. They, you know, they see the glitter and the glam, and we're out there before people. But in order to get to that stage, it takes a lot of blood and sweat. You know, I think I was shocked. You know, I first got in the group, and I said, wow, I'm in the Temptations. I'm going to have all these women. And then they said, see you at 8 o'clock in the morning. I said, 8 o'clock in the morning? They said, yeah, we got rehearsal all day. So that's how it started. But you
know
what?
You also came at a period where they were singing a different style of music, right?
Well,
When
I got in the group, thanks to the late, great Norman Whitfield, the producer, well, to replace David Ruffin was a huge task. He had such a tremendous and unusual voice. And, of course, you know, they had My Girl out and Wish It Would Rain, a couple great hits. Well, I was a singer, but I brought another complete style to the group. And, you know, I had did a couple of songs. You do a couple of test songs. They were all right. But in order to replace David Ruffin, you had to come out with something that was super.
New, right?
And we had to get a style. And so what happened, I think we were sitting around the studio and we heard this record. You know, we listened to records a lot of times just to see what other artists are doing. And what happened? I got in a group with Eddie Kendricks, Melvin, Otis, and Paul. And why I'm saying that, each one of these guys were lead singers in their own right. They were great singers, great voices. That's what made up the Temptations. Well, what was so significant about the record we heard, which was by a group called Sly and the Family Stones, it was called Dance to the Music. You remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I'm not even gonna start.
Well, what happened? The producer heard it, we heard it, and he all of a sudden he said, "You know what? Maybe we'll sing a line a piece. That way we can utilize all of this talent we got here." And that's why in Cloud Nine, you see me singing a line, Paul singing a line, Eddie singing a line, Otis Melvin singing a line, and it was something new. It was a chance we took. Because also it was a long playing record, you know, and people didn't play records but 3 minutes. But as you see, it was a great, great gamble.
But it worked.
It worked. We won a Grammy Award, sold millions of records with it, and it kind of launched the Dennis Edwards era, you know.
Well, and also you brought out, and I'm going to play that later because it's another long song, Papa Was a Rolling Stone.
Papa
that won
Was
a, Grammy.
A Rolling Stone. You know, that one. After we had success with Cloud Nine, we said, well, that's great. And we did, I think, Psychedelic Shack, confusing. So
the one I liked was "I Can't Get Next to You."
Can't get next to you about that one. And then when he came up with Papa, we were mixed at first because Papa was really a long, long musical version, you know, of a song. Now what we liked the music because it was a great beat. We just didn't think the disc jockeys would play it because, you know, back in the early days of music and jocks, you know, if your record was over 3 minutes, boy, you almost didn't get no airplay.
Exactly.
But we sort of paved the way along with the Dells when they had Outstay, and the disc jockeys, they got really, really slick with it. They found out they could take a break.
Oh.
The record would be 6 and 7 minutes, boy, they can run down to the store and come back. So it worked out. It worked out.
Well, that's great. Now, I know I want to mention that you're going to be performing at Lehman Center.
I'm here.
You're going to be performing at Lehman Center for the Performing Arts, which
looking forward to that. It's going to be a great show. You know, anytime we come to New York, it's always great, you know. And I think I spoke with the promoter yesterday, and she says it's in the Bronx.
It is. It's in the Bronx.
So we're looking forward to it. You know, I'm not a New Yorker, but I kind of think like New Yorkers, so I love New Yorkers, you know. Because, you know, one thing about New Yorkers, they really enjoy their music.
I was about to say we're enthusiastic audience.
Yes, they are. They are, and they know music, and you know, it makes the entertainer feel so much better when you can entertain people, and they respect your music, and they help you with your show. It just makes the show better.
Well, wait till you meet the Lehman Center audience. The Bronx audience is
very enthusiastic. Different. I'm like, I can't wait.
Well, they like to get out and dance. We got to tell them, sit down, you're blocking the view.
Well, you know, the good part about our music, most of our music, it makes you want to get up anyway. You know?
I know, that's what I'm saying. And they're going to be trying to get up and dance and everything. But I want to say where it is for those people that want to go out there and buy tickets. It's at 250 Bedford Park, a Boulevard West, and that's Lehman Center for the Performing Arts. And David is going to be there with the Marvelettes, who I believe is going to be the opening act, and that's going to be Saturday.
That's going to be like a Motown show.
Oh, isn't it though? So I know it's going to be exciting. And that's going to be Saturday, April 9th at 8 p.m. And for those people that want to get tickets, you can go online at Lehman Center. Let me say www.lehmancenter.org. And then you can call the box office at 718-960-8833. And as Mr. Edwards just said, it's going to be a Motown show.
Yeah, it's going to be a great show. You know, Marvelettes is one of our sister groups. We grew up with them. And, of course, you know, the groups now have changed players because, you know, time has passed us by. But, you know, if you remember the Temptations like they used to be, that's what I'm bringing. I'm bringing the Get Readys, the Ain't Too Proud to Beg, the Wish It Rains, the Papa Was a Rolling Stones, and on and on and on and on and on.
No, we're looking forward to it.
Huh?
And the Marvelettes said they're going to also have on the style of the era, the beehive hairdo and the jewelry. And
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We also going to have the style. We're going to wear our sharp uniforms, you know, with the sparklers on them.
All right. We're looking forward to that. Because that was the other thing. You guys were known for your wardrobe as well.
Well, you know, in the beginning, and there were so many fine groups, many great, great groups. So we had to, like, set a precedent in order to get away from the pack. So first of all, you had to be a great singer. Then you remember we came out with our microphone.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember back that far, we had a special mic built. And, of course, after you did that, we wanted to outdress everybody as well. So we got our own sort of style. We like to look flashy, but it wanted to be classy, you know. And that's what we call the Temptation style.
Well, you also mentioned a moment ago that you're not from New York. You know, I was down in Demopolis, Alabama. You know where that is? Cause that's about 80 miles.
My home is Alabama.
Right, and I was about to say, because I know that's 89 miles south of Birmingham. Is that where you were born?
Well, I was actually born in Fairfield, Alabama. Eddie and Paul, they were born in in Ensley, Alabama, and Melvin was born in Mobile, Alabama. So we're sort of an Alabama group, you know.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. But
well,
how did you make your way to Detroit?
Well, like all of the black families, at one time we had a great auto industry, you know. And it was a lot of jobs opened up, and my father, as well as all the other singers' fathers, they flocked to Detroit, and they got hired, you know, by Chrysler, Ford, and General Motors. So we went along with our parents, and that's how we always all ended up in Detroit.
How old were
and
you
it's
then?
A good thing we did.
You were still a youngster when you moved up there, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. I had to be 8 or 9 or 10, something like that. But, you know, I go back to Alabama almost every year, so Alabama's in my blood. Detroit's in my blood, too, you know.
Well, I'm sure you have family both places.
Well, you know, most of my I had one auntie in Opa-locka. You remember that? Know where that is?
Georgia?
No, Alabama. Opa-locka.
Oh, Opa-locka? No, that one I'm not familiar
well,
with.
Well, it's I had one auntie, you wouldn't believe it. She passed about 5 years ago. She was 99 years old.
Wow.
And she still walked and slopped the hogs and did all of her work on her farm. And, you know, it was just amazing when I went to see her, you know. Well, we lost
well, it's amazing people that grow up in the country do tend
well,
to
live
a long time.
Well, they live a long time, and you know, we wonder, you know, what's the secret? The secret is they have a good life. You know, they don't
and
have
the
a
diet.
Lot of vices. They have a lot of vices either.
Well, I think also most of them grow their own food, don't they? They
grow their own food. They have their own animals, and I remember I was down there. I had to go out every morning. When it got light, I had to get up and go out and grab a watermelon off the blind and feed the hogs. Or I didn't eat. You know, back in them days, you worked or you didn't eat.
Well, you know, I grew up on a farm, and that's farm life that everybody contributes. Because if you don't, as you say, you don't eat.
Yeah, I tell these kids now they don't understand. I say when it got light, you got up. I say, and when it got dark. Most people went to bed, you know. Well, you know,
absolutely.
They didn't have a lot of things like they got now. You know, we have so many vices now, you know. You know, most kids nowadays don't even go out until 10 o'clock.
Thank you. You know, when I grew up, you only had one channel on TV.
Right.
So
you know, my daughter the other day,
that.
She broke her cell phone, and she asked me, oh, she was just devastated. You know, she's about to die. And I'm like, mm-hmm. She said, what did you do? I said, I'm glad you asked me. I said, we didn't even have a cell phone. You know, but it's good. It's good. Technology is good.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the part of life, right? Everything keeps evolving and changing. Now, you evolved because at one time, was your father a minister?
My father was a minister, and, of course, you know, I grew up in the church. And, you know, my father and Eddie's father and Paul's father song singing some type of gospel group in Alabama. And I don't know much about it because I was young. They were very, very good. And that's why I guess the three of us became great singers, you know, because kind of we didn't fall far from the vine.
Well, were you part of a group called Crowns of Joy at one time?
I was a part of the Crowns of Joy, a part of the Revelation Wonders. I have great roots in the gospel field. In fact, up until I was about 17, 18, you know, my people were Kojic, sanctified people, and I couldn't even play a gospel, a rock and roll music in my house.
Well, I bet you could.
I had to go sneak around the corner and try to sing some of the rock and roll music I would hear, because my parents were very strict.
So did you sneak around the corner with the fireballs?
Well, you know, that was later. I went to the service and came back, and I was performing in the service. That's how it really started. And I came back and formed a group called Dennis Edwards and the Fireballs. But it's so ironic. I remember when I first got with the Temptations and, you know, started making a little money, and my mom, God bless her, she's gone now, but she was so religious, you know. She's always telling me, you know, you're singing for the devil, and I feel so bad. I raised you up in the church, and now you're the winner straight. And I got to tell you a story. It's kind of funny. Well, I used to come by, you know, and you know how parents are. You know, they don't ask for a lot. And, you know, you want to do so much for them. But, you know, they don't need a lot, you know. But I went by, and I never forget, I had made some money, and I brought my mom $1,000. And she said, I don't want that devil's money.
Oh, my gosh.
And I, you know, she and it kind of hurt me. So what I did, I put the money in the envelope, and I put it on top of the fireplace. I mean, this is funny story. It's so funny. So this is my first, this was in the first of the month, right? About the 25th of the month, mama called me up. She said, son, I hope the Lord don't mind if I use that $1,000 to pay some of these bills. Yeah, it was funny. And ever since then, you know, we've been fine. You know, she let me help her out. And that was the joy of my life.
Of course. And that is joy when you know.
But, you know, I understood her because the way we were raised in the church, we were raised not to do anything devilish. And, of course, you know, times are hard. And I tried to tell her. I said, Mom, I'm just doing a job. I just happen to be a singer, and I'm trying to help you. Because I got lucky, and I got a chance to make some money. And when family makes money, you're supposed to help your family. So she finally understood.
Well, you know, the Pointer sisters told me they were preacher's kids,
and they
practice to be
I know very
singers.
Well. I married one of them.
Oh, get out!
Did you know that? I was married to Ruth Pointer. We have a beautiful daughter named Issa.
She's the one I spoke to.
Issa? Yes,
no,
that's
Ruth.
My daughter. She's my daughter. Me and Ruth was married. We, real strange. We met and on tour, and I hate to tell you the story, but she wouldn't say yes to nothing, right? Mm-hmm. She told me.
You mean
said,
your
well,
request
she,
for marriage?
She said, "If you have, you want this, you're gonna have to marry me." And we would happen to be in Vegas, and I married her. And we, you know, we were together a few years, and we just decided that, you know, sometimes you get into a relationship and you decided that you're better friends than you are man and wife. So right now we're still great friends. We just have to make a daughter. But we get along better away from each other than we did with each other. It happened.
Well, and your daughter's in the group, too.
Well, she was in the group. She's gave me a grandbaby, and she's living in Alabama now. And she's married, and she's trying to pursue her own career. Spoke to her the other day, of course. They always want money when you speak to them.
Well, of course. They expect that.
Well,
children,
you know,
expect
that's
that
what we did, you know. And when my daughter asked me for anything, I always say, well, my mom always told me, she said, one day, son, God just may have a plan for us, because whatever you ask me for, your kid going to ask you for. And that's just about right.
Exactly. It just goes from one to the other.
Family, right, you know, you look at a kid and they give you trouble and you know, and some of our kids give us trouble. I just tell them, I say, you know, one day you're going to have kids too.
Exactly.
And it's going to come right back on you.
They don't know what you're talking about then.
No, they don't know yet, but they will.
Exactly. They will. Now, I wanted to ask you about when you first joined the Temps, were all the original guys there?
When I first joined the Temps, everybody was there. You know, I replaced David Ruffin, of course. There was Paul, there was Otis, there was Melvin, and there was Eddie Kendricks. And,
who was Eldridge Bryant?
Eldridge Bryant was a guy when the group first started. And see, when the group very first started, the first 4 years before I got with him, David Ruffin was the drummer. And Eldridge Bryant was the tenor singer. Well, he got into a squabble with Paul Williams. They had a big, big fight. And hit Paul in the head with a bottle and something. Well, anyway, they put him out of the group, and they put David in the group. And then the group kind of took off, you know, and that's who Elvis Bryant was. He was one of the originals, you know.
But actually, his leaving sort of what gave the Temptations an opportunity to gain fame.
Well, when he left, they discovered a young man on the drums named David Ruffin was a hell of a singer, and nobody ever knew it. And they were looking for somebody to replace him, and David said, can you guys let me try out?
Wow.
That happens a lot of times. So Teddy Pendergrass was a drummer, too.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was a drummer, too. And he got this shot with a Harold Melvin the same way.
Wow.
Yep.
I mean, some of these stories are so interesting that you don't even realize what goes on.
Well, you know, we have so much inside of us, especially after 40 and 50 years out here on the road, You know, one day I always said one day I'm going to take time to write a book, and it's so ironic. I tried to do this a couple of years ago, and I got a writer, and I couldn't remember nothing.
you know,
that's how it goes. So the guy was telling me, he said, the best way to do it is get a person to travel with you. So, because when these moments come out and these little things that are so interesting, he can jot it down. Because, I mean, I actually had a writer, they come by.
Well, we had a tape recorder.
Well, we had a couple of hours to write a book, and I sit down, and he's like, let's write the book. And I was like, okay, well, I don't remember much.
You know what? That's like being at a psychiatrist's office. They say, okay, the clock is on, start talking.
Yeah, but tell me what's going on. You're like, you're supposed to be talking to me.
I know. It's hard to do it that way. You know, when somebody comes in there, you're just sitting there and they say, dredge up your life. And it, you know, I do it better in conversation, like just you and I talking right now. A lot of stories are coming out that
if you're comfortable with a person, you can actually talk to them. You know, sometimes these setup meetings, well, you're on your guard, they're on their guard. You don't get a lot, you know.
I agree. That's why I like to do my interviews. The way I do it, just chat with you. It's not really like an interview. It's just like an afternoon tea.
Right.
Now, you branched out on your own in 84. Why did you do that?
Well, I left the group. You know what happens? Lead singers, we're very eccentric people. You know, I was real good friends with Teddy Pendergrass. Teddy left his group, so I called myself going to leave my group. I had a deal with Motown, got an album in the can, and they promised me something. And when I finished the album, they reneged on the money they was going to give me. So
wow.
I got really, really mad.
You got pissed off.
I got pissed off and sort of like quit the group for a couple months. Well, during the period that I left the group went to Columbia Records in New York, and they made a few records with a Lewis Price, and anyway, they came back to Motown. I was still there doing nothing. They asked me to join the group again, and that's how I got back in the group.
Well, you know what? I want to play something called Don't Look Any Further.
Yeah, I got a story about that. Don't Look Any Further was written by a young man named Dennis Lambert. Young white guy. He was on safari in South Africa. Hold on for a second.
Okay, you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. He was on safari in South Africa, and he said he'd seen some natives in the field, and they were working, and they had this chant that they were doing, and he said the chant was Deo, Deo, Mamba Gio, Deo. You know, as they were working.
That sounds like Harry Belafonte.
So he took his tape recorder out. So he didn't know how he was going to use it because it was so haunting. Because I don't know if you've ever been to Africa, but those are the singingest people in the world.
I bet.
And he said he put it on his tape recorder. So when he came back home, he got in the studio and he started messing around with grooves. And he thought about that day-o, day-o, mamba G-I-O, and he put, don't look any further, and that's how that record became.
Well, now that you've introduced the song, I'm going to play it. Don't look any further.
Oh, oh, well. Take over. Oh, girl, don't look in the sun.
don't look any further.
Send you the show afterwards, and then you can have
oh,
it
oh, you
your
might
own.
Send me that. I might have to put that in my show. That's really nice. Anyway, yeah, that's how that song came about. And, of course, the young lady, Syeda Garrett, who sang it with me, well, she actually, we were trying to get Chaka, and we couldn't find Chaka. And, you know, you just go to show young singers what they have, when they get the call, they have to be ready. Well, they asked her to put a demo on for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the demo was so good when I put my voice on. I said, man, we don't need nobody but her, you know. So always be ready. If they call you to do something, you know, you think it's just going to be temporary, do your best work. What happened? When I put my voice on it and her voice, it just became a record, you know.
Well, that's the thing. I believe in that you should always do everything in life with your best foot forward because
You never know.
Right. No, and I think know. You should live with honor and integrity, too.
Right. That's very true.
So you mentioned that you stepped off from the Temptations and returned, but while you were off, did you have a hit of your own single, Don't Look Any Further?
Don't Look Any Further was
that
I
was
did,
it, right?
I did,
that
I did
just,
two albums, the Don't Look Any Further album and the Cooling Out album. And Don't Look Any Further was by far the biggest hit.
I could see why.
Yeah, it's an infectious beat, and it's just a great song. You know, some songs, you know, you hear and you have to get used, to them, have to listen to them over and over before you like them. That's one of those songs that like those Michael Jackson songs that you just love right away.
Well, wasn't that good for you that at least when you did step off, you did have a good hit? You had a great hit?
Oh, it's wonderful. It was really great. It was great for me. You know, one thing about, you know, and I can tell you about everybody that's been in this temptation syndrome, most of mm-hmm. us temptations, you know, we have hits, but the public will never let us get away from our temptation music. You know,
is
I
that
do
good
that
or
my
is that
show.
Bad?
I do Don't Look Any Further. My show, I do some of my single records. But they still want to hear Temptations every time they hear one of us.
Do you ever throw in a new song that they haven't heard, and even though they want you to play?
Oh, yeah, we do new things a lot of the time, you know. But the basic show is, you know, we've got 40 years of hits, and, you know, I can do Temptation records for about 3 hours, you know. And, we got some comedy. I got a great bass singer, and he does a couple of great versions of Rainy Night in Georgia. We do a version of My Girl, and but almost most of the songs we do are Temptation records, which is great.
Well, tell me about you and the Temptation Review. How did that come about?
Well, this came about, as you know, most of us, you know, in the Temptations, I had a lot of changes. Most of the times when you're in a big group and you it's very successful, you know, the first few years, you know, you're young and crazy and, you know, you have plenty of women. And then all of a sudden, as you get older, you realize you may not have made I'm doing well, I'm making a little money, but somebody is making all of this money, you know. Most of us that ever left the group left for financial reasons. We just really thought that we weren't getting the money that we were supposed to be getting. So what happened, I never forget, we were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame at the Waldorf Hotel. That's before they had a building in Cleveland. And
that must have been exciting.
Yeah, well, it was more exciting for me than you know, because, you know, as you know, I wasn't an original. But I never forget, I called Eddie and I called David. I said, man, we all of us were out of the group at the time. I said, man, you guys are going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I said, man, I'm so happy for you. And then all of a sudden I got a letter and they said for the first time in the hall, they're going to induct 6 members, and I was included. So that was quite an honor. You know, it was just...
Well, you would be, because you changed their sound as well.
Yeah, but I wasn't an original member, and it would have been fine if I didn't go in with them, because I was just happy to get the opportunity to be with them. And all of a sudden, anyway, me, David, and Eddie, we were at the Waldorf, and Otis had his group, you know, Temptations. In fact, Ollie Wilson was with them, and Otis and Melvin. It was like a split between David and Eddie and Otis and Melvin, okay, at that time. And we all ended up at the Waldorf. And I know what happened. When we came, they had all the seats, so they got another table for us. Well, during the course of them finding us a table, Eddie and David wanted to take a smoke break. So we went down Park Avenue, I think it is, and we created so much excitement that we didn't even know, because people were just walking, blowing their horns, getting out of their car, and we didn't know what it was. What it was they were just excited to see Eddie, David, and Dennis together.
Oh, okay.
Well, when we got back home, a couple of promoters had called us, and they said, why don't you guys, you're not doing anything. I was not doing nothing. David's doing nothing. Eddie wasn't. And we formed Ruffin, Kendrick, and Edwards. Well, this group, the Temptation Review featuring Dennis Edwards, is... When I lost David and I lost Eddie, I continued to group, and I called it Dennis Edwards and the Temptation Review.
And who are the new members? What are their names?
Well, I'm so fortunate. One new member is Mr. David C. He replaced David. I got Chris Arnold, who replaced Eddie. I got Mike Patello, great, great bass singer. And I got a surprise for you.
Oh.
You remember Paul Williams?
Yes.
Bringing his son, Paul Williams Jr.
Wow.
He sings with me now, looks like him, dances like him, and I'm so proud of him. I remember, see, we had the late Ollie Woodson with us, and when we lost Ollie, you know, unfortunately, God bless him, he's one of the greatest singers to live. Well, Paul was, you know, we always knew Paul, you know, from being Paul's son. Well, he assured me, he said, man, I want to sing. And I'm like, I thought about the age bracket thing. And, you know, he said, man, I've been trying to do this all my life. He said, I knew all my daddy's songs. I even know the routines. So we let him come to rehearsal, and I was so surprised. I mean, this man dances just like his father, sings like him, and he's turned into quite a vocalist. So that's a surprise for you.
Wow, it's like having Paul.
One of the original members back again.
Wow, is that something or what?
Yeah, it's gonna be something. That's gonna be something. That's why you can't miss the show. You know? Can you imagine?
Well,
Paul?
You know, I'm not.
And Paul was the guy when I got in the group who used to rehearse me for 8 or 9 hours a day. And I tell the story on stage. I said, well, you know what? Paul was my taskmaster. He was the one that took my hand when I got in the group and led me through all of the rigors and routines. And I'm the one, 40 years later, that's got his son. Ain't that something?
That is something.
That's truly amazing.
Oh, it's interesting how the world operates in cycles, huh?
Yeah, and I've never in a thousand years would have ever thought Paul's son would be singing with me. But it's working out really good. He's a great guy, lots of fun. Plus, he brings that youth to the group, you know?
I'm sorry, say that again?
He brings that youth aspect.
Oh, yeah, he brings back to, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the girls love him.
Are you guys still dancing, doing the dance routine?
Yeah, we still dance. You know, we don't kick as high as we used to, but we're still dancing. You know, I'm remarkably in decent shape for my age. You know, sometimes when I do a show, it kills me. Then, but you know, the fact that I can just still get up there and do the show, sing and dance, and it's the only time that I really feel real happy is when I'm out there on the stage.
Wow.
And it keeps me going, you know. I have moments now. I have moments when some of the guys are singing Eddie's song or David's song, and some of the nights when they sound like them, you might see a tear come to my eye because I really miss my guys, you know.
I actually looked up some of the members, Richard Street and Damon Harris.
Yeah, they're still working. They're around. They got their own groups, and they're out there working. Like I said, once, that's what I was mentioning a few minutes ago. Once you get into this temptation thing, it's hard to get out. Richard has a group. Damon has a group. Glenn has a group. You know, there's so many of them.
Ron Tyson and Theo.
Ron Tyson, he still sings with Otis. He's doing very well, too.
Okay. You know, I interviewed Otis, too.
Huh?
A long time ago. I talked to Otis a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. Otis is a great guy. You know, we had a squabble in court for a long time when I started using the Temptation Review. Well, they didn't want me to use any part of the Temptations. And, of course, after about $1 million and all kinds of lawyers, it's so ironic. I ran into Otis in Philadelphia in the lobby. And I said, Otis, I love you. He said, I love you too. I said, why are we fighting? He said, I don't have no idea. So we got together, and we drew up an agreement that I would be the Temptation Review feature, and Dennis Edwards, he would be the Temptations. And, of course, everybody was happy except the lawyers.
Of course.
They wanted to make, they said, you guys are crazy. Because, see, my lawyer team was saying, you contributed so much to the group, you deserve to have a piece of the name. And all I wanted to do was work. I didn't want to make Otis mad, and all he wanted to do was work. And so now we have buried the hatchet, and we call each other every now and then to see how each other's doing. And I truly, because he's the last link. He's the last link, and of course, he's the reason for me. So I love him, okay?
Exactly. And, you know, usually if the lawyers would stay out of it, most people wouldn't even be fighting
as my lawyer every week, you know, man, I'm going to get you the name and send me $20,000. You know, and I kept doing that for I was working, you know, I kept doing that for about a year. And I'm like, damn, 20, 40, 60. You know, you start looking, I'm like,
adds up.
I'm like, well, are we going to, is this coming to, I almost got the case. We're going to make a settlement. Just send me another 20. You know, and then when we told them that we had met Otis, they forbidded that. Don't ever talk to Otis again. Told him don't ever talk to me, of course. They know we could just sit down as human beings and say, what are we doing?
Exactly. And you know what they were saying
there's enough work for everybody. And you know, it is enough work. But, you know, we were young, and they took advantage of us. But luckily, see, sometimes time just brings about a lot of knowledge.
Healing. It brings about a healing.
Yeah, it really does. It really does.
Well, what you were saying to Otis was, you know what, I can't get next to you, and I want to play that. because now you can, and you did. And here we are.
Okay.
I can't get next to you. Took $1 million, but you did get next to Otis. But I want to identify the station. This is the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, and we're talking to Dennis Edwards of the Temptations Review. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, he's going to be at Lehman Center for the Performing Arts on April 9th, headlining, and he's also going to be singing and sharing the stage with the Marvelettes. So it's going to be a great show, and if you want tickets, I suggest you run, not walk, but run to the box office or call 718-960-8833 or go online at www.lehmancenter.org. And if you don't know where the center is, it's at 250 Bedford Park Boulevard West in the Bronx. And again, that's Saturday, April 9th. So that's just around the corner, folks. And we're promised a wonderful Motown show because the Marvelettes were part of the Motown too, the first girl group, right?
Yeah, they were a great group. You know, that Richard Sleep was married to one of the original ones. No, he wasn't. He was married to one of the Velvettes.
Oh,
you remember the Velvettes?
The Velvettes?
The Velvettes.
The Velvettes. No.
They had a record called "Too Many Fish in the Sea."
Oh.
Too many fish in the sea.
Because the Marvelettes say they sing that. At least that's what you told me.
Well, it could have been the Marvelettes. It was one or two. I mean, they had the Marvelettes, the Velvettes.
Oh, okay.
It could have been. Maybe I'm wrong.
But as you say, there's so many changes of personnel over the years that it's
hard to say. With girl groups, it's amazing because, the girl groups that were successful, they didn't like to take a chance on a lot of them because they had boyfriends and husbands who when they seen them on the stage and all the men, camering looking after them, they took them out of the groups. And then sometimes they would get pregnant. So the girl group is really amazing that they lasted so long because, you know, sometimes they just got tired, they became mothers, they didn't want to do this anymore. So it was really rare when a girl group could just maintain as long as they did, you know.
Look how long the Supremes maintained. They were...
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they were the divas, you know.
Oh, yeah. They were the divas.
Right.
Well, before them, was it Martha and the Vandellas that were...
Martha and the Vandellas was before the Supremes. And, let me say, they were right along with the Marvelettes, you know, and the Velvettes. But they were the great, great Motown groups.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got to give Berry Gordy his kudos because he's
great. He's the reason for all of this. You know, I tell people, a lot of people, they say a lot of nasty things about him. And I told him, I said, you know, you got to remember this. If it wasn't for Mr. Gordy, we'll probably be working at one of those auto plants, you know?
There you go.
So, and he had the dream. He gave us the opportunity. Of course, a lot of us, we didn't take care of our business properly because, you know, you don't know when you get a guy and you take him out of the hood, and you put a suit on him and make him a star. Well, they didn't
have a lot to handle.
Well, it's a lot to handle, and of course, you know, when you up there in the lights, you will sign anything for them to tell you you're going to be on Ed Sullivan Show.
Tell me about it.
You sign your
Speaking
life away.
Of that.
Most of us, you know, our first contract was really almost slavery, you know. But then after we became successful and got a chance to read, and we had the contracts, we just never read them because we were just so happy to be able to do what we were doing. Because, you know, like singing is really a blessing to be able to do something you love to do and make money with. That's just a blessing.
And, you know, that kind of thing, what you were just describing, goes on to this day with contracts and things.
Oh, yeah, it goes on to
when
day.
You're
you know,
young.
You get a young guy and they get him out of the hood and they put some paperwork in front of him. They tell you to sign this here, and we're gonna make you a star. He signs it. He don't even really read it because he don't have another. He's already at rock bottom, and whatever you feel in your mind that people will not misuse you, but guess what? They will.
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
Some of these contracts are outrageous.
Yes.
To be honest with you, that they tie you up and you can't do anything and dare you to do anything.
Oh, that's very true. I'm going through that right now, you know, with people. I won't call any names, but I got some people that I'm signed up with now and I'm trying to get away from because it's almost like slavery, you know. But, you know, just pray for me.
I will, and I'm a good prayer.
Okay.
But I want to talk to you about meeting Obama at the 2009 inaugural ball. What was that like?
Well, you know, we did not meet him. We were supposed to do a inaugural ball show. You know, it was a whole bunch of us, I think. Chaka Khan, Dionne Warwick. Oh, it was just it was about 15 superstars that were supposed to do one of the balls and meet him. And for some reason, you know, his very first inaugural ball, and he chose a black promotion company. And it's sad to say this. They ran off with the money.
What?
They got us to D.C. We got our rooms. We were just so excited. We got ready to rehearse, and we noticed the band wasn't there. Well, they hadn't paid the band. That was the first red flag. So I remember Dionne Warwick, she was in charge, and she called me. She said, Dennis, I got bad news. I said, what is it? She said, we're not going to perform because we can't find the guy who's supposed to pay us. And he was one of the people that Obama's people trusted because they had made a protest about most of the political affairs. They don't reach out to black promoters. And this happened to be a black promoter. He ran off with the money.
Oh, is that horrible or what?
It was horrible, you know, but it was a good thing. I got a chance to, we did a little impromptu performance at Muhammad Ali's birthday party, which was on the same day as inauguration. So that was good.
Oh, I see. So you did end up working, but you haven't met the president yet.
I haven't met him yet, you know. I'm looking forward to it. You know, I supported him, of course, and it's like a dream to me. You know, I never thought I would see it before I died, but I think it's a great thing, but they're giving him hell, though.
Oh, aren't they? But he is a smart guy.
I really think it was divine calling, because the average African American person would have just quit by now.
I don't think some of us have
the temperament to take what he's going through right now.
Well, you know, he's gonna try to run for another term, but in a way, I feel they brought him in kind of to blame him for everything and try to
make people forget about
Bush.
It's like things are happening now with that office that would have never went on with the Bush era. You know, people are so disrespectful. They got signs in the street. I mean, it just hurts your heart, and you hate to think it's because of his color. You know,
what else could it be? The bigotry is like
in our minds, you know, we want to really think we have crossed over, but I think in the back of all of our minds, we got to realize there's still a long ways to go.
Yeah, I agree. There's a long ways to go, but America couldn't do better right now. I think he's the right man at the right time.
I think he's the right man. You know, they keep forgetting that we were in a super ditch. You know,
thank you.
Everybody's saying he's not doing anything, but you know, when you're in the bottom of the hole, it takes a lot to get out of the hole.
And not only that, they're pushing him for other wars, and we're broke.
He didn't make us broke. He didn't make us broke.
And what makes
it ridiculous is they don't spend money.
Mm-hmm. They want him to go to war, but they have to spend money to go to war, which is already what broke us. So he can't go to war. He has to be diplomatic.
It's a master plan. Anything to make him and his administration look bad, I really believe that. You know, I was on the Tom Joyner cruise about last week.
How was that?
Speaking to Roland Martin about it, and he said the same thing. He says, man, I told him, I said, you know, I didn't know politics was so crafty, you know. I said, what happened to the honest politicians? And he said, he don't think they got any of those.
I think American people need to vote everybody out. Put ordinary people in that
don't have an agenda and can just think and try to help the people.
Because it's become an oligarchy. It's a rule of the rich. It's not a democracy anymore. I mean, everybody that's running is wealthy, billionaires. They're not in touch with the people.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at, you know, I live in St. Louis, and they're cutting half of the teachers, just taking their jobs, you know, because of the budget. I mean, and you know, the kids are already bad, you know.
And blaming the teachers for all the problems.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna take the life out of us, you know, because that's mostly the inner city kids.
Look at it is an ignorant public is a public that can be enslaved.
Yeah. It's just really bad. But you know, like I said, I'm one of those optimists. I just believe it's going to get turned around, because I think he's the right man for the job. But I'm gonna tell you, I wouldn't want it.
I'm telling you, and I'm almost like thinking, please don't run again, because let them have it back, because it's just.
This is just my opinion. I'm just really shocked that they haven't made an attempt on him, you know, because this country has some people that you don't even want to be next to.
I'm telling you, and that's what a lot of people's fear is. But you know, you got people from all over the world praying for him, and I think
I think he's here for a reason. Okay,
and he's there for a reason.
I don't think they're gonna let anything happen to him. And if it's like I think, if he's got the man upstairs with him, he don't have to worry.
No, he doesn't. I think he came for at the right time at the when we needed him. But if it's meant for us to fall like the Roman Empire, it'll be awakening to the people, and the people do need to wake up.
That's true. That's very true.
We cannot go on the way we've been letting others suffer while we thrive.
Right.
And everything comes around in a cycle now. So we have
to wake up, too, as a people,
and realize that it's a world now, a world people, not... We're not separated from anybody, and we all have to work together.
No, we're not. You can see by the uprisings all over the world now.
And there's a reason for that. I mean, there's an uprising because people are striving to be
free.
People are
tired.
They don't want to be under
these
dictators.
People are tired. You know, people are tired. We're tired of looking at the guy that come by your house with four Rolls Royces.
I'm telling you.
I mean, it's like the rich gets richer and the little gets nothing. And, you know, people, they're not going to stand for it much longer.
And then everybody's putting it on the middle class to pick up the tab.
Well, you know, the way they got it moving now, it won't be no middle class in 5 years.
Exactly. And so what are you going to do then? Because right now you're expecting the middle class to do it all, and they can't anymore.
That's right.
But this is what's going to wake up the people that, you know, we got to look in the direction of who's getting all this money. That's very true. Annick today, Dennis Edwards.
Thank you.
And we're going to close the show now. Once more, I'll mention to the listening audience that you can call 718-960-8833 for tickets or go online at www.lehmancenter.org. And we're going to end the show now with Papa Was a Rolling Stone. Here we go.
Hey, Mama, is it true what you say that Papa never was a day in his life?
And Mama, some bad talk going around town saying that Papa had 3 outside children and another wife. And that ain't right.
Heard some talk about Papa doing some sofa preaching, talking about saving souls and all the time leeching.